Now, the subject of today's class is the Four Noble Truths. The teaching of the Four Noble Truths is very important among the teachings of the Buddha. Actually, whatever the Buddha taught during 40 years of his ministry can be reduced to the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. And so it is an important subject. Before we go into the Four Noble Truths, first we must understand what truth means according to teachings of the Buddha. Now, what is truth? It's very simple. Something that is true. So something that is real. Something that is not otherwise than, say, it is stated. So truth is not like illusion in magic shows, because in magic shows illusions are untrue. And also it is not deceptive like a mirage. So you see a mirage from a distance and then you think there is water there. But when you get close to it, it disappears or it runs away from you. So truth is not like a mirage, which is deceptive. And also, truth is something that can be discovered, that can be known. And that is what is called truth in Buddhism. So actually, anything which is true, which is real, is called truth in Buddhism. And so truth need not be lofty, truth need not be only good, but whatever it is, if it is true to what it has been described, then it is a truth. Now, hotness or heat in fire. So heat in fire is a truth because it is always true. Or whatever thing it comes into contact with, it will heat it up or it will burn it. And so that heat in the fire is a truth. And as you may know, that the second noble truth is craving. Craving is an unwholesome mental state, but it is also called truth in Buddhism. So in Buddhism, truth need not be good only, truth need not be wholesome only. It can be both good and bad, wholesome and unwholesome. And people say that there is only one truth, and different teachers express it in different ways. But in Buddhism, there is not one truth. There are four truths. And these four truths are called noble truths. Now, they are called noble truths because they are to be penetrated by the noble ones. Now, in Buddhism, those who have attained enlightenment are called noble ones. So those are the Buddhas, and then Paccika Buddhas, Arahants, and also those that have reached the lower stages of enlightenment. So these persons are called noble ones, and the four truths taught by the Buddha are called noble truths because they are to be penetrated by, or they are to be understood by, they are to be realized by the noble ones. Now, actually, when they become noble ones, they have already penetrated these four noble truths. But here we use the term noble to mean those who are trying to become nobles. So these truths are called noble truths because they are to be penetrated by the noble ones. The second meaning of the name noble truth is that it is the truth of the noble one. Here, the noble one means the Buddha. So these are the truths of the Buddha. That means these are the truths discovered and made known by the Buddha. And others who penetrate these truths do so depending or relying on the Buddha. So that is why in this sense the noble truths are called noble truths, because they are the truths of the Buddha, the truths possessed by the Buddha, or the truths discovered by and taught by the Buddha. And the third meaning is these are called noble truths because they are noble making. That means when a person penetrates them, he becomes a noble. So these truths make someone that penetrates them noble persons. That is why these truths are called noble truths. So in this sense, they are called noble truths because they make someone noble. Or when someone penetrates them, he or she becomes a noble person. So what are these noble truths? Now there are four of them. First, I want you to be familiar with the names of these four noble truths in Pali, or both in Pali and English. Now the first noble truth is called Dukkha, right? And truth means Satya, so Dukkha Satya, or let's say just Dukkha. And the second noble truth is Samudaya, Samudaya. And then the third noble truth is Nirodha, Dha. And then the fourth noble truth is, it's a long name, Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patibhara. Now, it is important to understand the meaning of these words first. The first one is the word Dukkha. Now, Dukkha is translated as suffering. As I have told you many times, the English word suffering does not cover all the shades of meaning possessed by the word Dukkha in Pali. Now, the word Dukkha is explained in the commentaries as composed of Du and Kha. There may be many meanings of Du and many meanings of Kha, but in Visuddhimagga, the meaning of Du is given as despicable or vile, and Kha means empty. So something that is despicable and that is empty is called Dukkha. Now, why is it despicable? Because it is a cause of all all dangers and suffering. And it is empty, that is, it is empty of everlasting entity. It is empty of beauty, it is empty of lustingness, it is empty of pleasure, so it is called dukkha. So, in this sense, dukkha means something which is despicable and at the same time which is empty. The other meaning of dukkha, given in other commentaries, is that something which is difficult to endure or difficult to bear. Du means difficult and kha means endure or bear. So something which is difficult to bear is called dukkha. So this meaning makes more sense for us. Because whenever we hear the word dukkha, we always think of some kind of pain or suffering. But as you will know a few moments later, even what we call happiness is, according to the analysis of the Buddha, dukkha. So we may understand the word dukkha as something despicable and empty, or something that is difficult to endure. Now the second truth is called samudaya, or dukkha samudaya. Now, it is important to understand the meaning of the word samudaya. Samudaya is composed of sam, u, and aya. S-A-M, u, and A-Y-A. Here, A-Y-A, aya means a cause, and u means arising, and sam means coming together or combined with something. So the whole word samudaya means a cause of the arising, actually, of dukkha. The cause of arising of dukkha when combined with other conditions. Now that is important. When combined with other conditions. Mostly, we think that the cause of dukkha is what? Craving, right? But craving is not the only cause of suffering. There are other causes or conditions also. But craving is most prominent among them, and so we just say craving is the cause of or the origin of dukkha. Now, craving does not arise alone. It always arises with its companion. What is that? Ignorance. And also there are other conditions. So when craving gets the companionship of ignorance and others, it can cause dukkha. So samudaya, the meaning of the word samudaya should be understood that way. A cause of the arising of dukkha when combined with other conditions. Noble truth is the noble truth of cessation of suffering, and in Pali it is called dukkha nirodha, or just nirodha. Here the word nirodha is divided into ni and rodha, R-O-D-H-A. And the prefix ni means no or absence, and rodha means a prison or a confinement. So here a prison means the prison of round of rebirths. So the third noble truth is called Nirodha, because there is the absence of or cessation of the prison of samsara, the prison of round of rebirths. So this is one meaning of the word Nirodha. Second meaning given in the commentaries is Nirodha means the truth on attainment of which there is absence of the prison of samsara. That means when a person attains the third noble truth, which is Nibbana, there is no more rebirth for him. So when a person attains Nibbana, there will be no samsara for him in the future. And so that the third noble truth, which is Nibbana, is called Nirodha. One more meaning. And here the commentaries explain that the word is taken as just Nirodha, and it means non-arising in the future. Sometimes we translate it as cessation, but cessation really means non-arising in the future. Now, when a person attains enlightenment and eradicates mental defilements, he renders these mental defilements to be non-arising in the future. So the word Nirodha is made to mean non-arising in the future. And this third noble truth is called non-arising in the future because it is the condition, or it is the object of the enlightenment consciousness, which brings about the non-arising in the future of the third noble truth. Has a long name, Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada. Now, Patipada means practice, and Dukkha is Dukkha, and Nirodha is cessation, and Gamini. Now, this word is translated as the path leading to the cessation of suffering. But the explanation of the commentary is a little different. It explains that it is the practice that goes to the cessation of suffering. And here, goes to means take cessation of suffering as an object. Now, the fourth noble truth, as you may know, is the Eightfold Path, or the eight factors of path. And at the moment of enlightenment, a path consciousness arises, and these eight factors accompany that consciousness. Path consciousness takes Nibbana as object, and so these eight factors also take Nibbana as object. So taking Nibbana as object is here said to go to the object. So the practice or the path that goes to the cessation of suffering, that goes to Nibbana, is called Dukkha Nirodha Gamini. So in reality, the fourth noble truth is that which realizes the third noble truth, which takes the third noble truth as object. So it is not quite the path leading to the cessation of suffering, it takes cessation of suffering as object, and so it is already there, actually. So these are the meanings given in the commentaries, and I think understanding in this way can help us to understand the Four Noble Truths better. But after understanding the what meanings of these Four Noble Truths, we will just call them by their popular names, the Noble Truth of Suffering, Noble Truth of Origin of Suffering, Noble Truth of Cessation of Suffering, and Noble Truth of the Path that goes to the cessation of suffering. Now, these Four Noble Truths are important, I said. First, it was the Buddha who discovered these Four Noble Truths. Now, these Four Noble Truths are not created by the Buddha. Actually, they were, say, hidden under a thick growth of ignorance when there were no Buddhas in the world. And then a Buddha appears and discovers or penetrates these Four Noble Truths. And the discovery or penetration of these Four Noble Truths makes him a Buddha. And then, after that, the Buddha reveals these Four Noble Truths to the world. So, the Four Noble Truths are not created by the Buddha, but were discovered and taught by the Buddha. And then, Buddha was not indebted to anyone for the discovery of these Four Noble Truths. That means Buddha does not need anybody's help or anybody's teaching to discover these Four Noble Truths. He discovered and penetrated these Four Noble Truths all by himself, depending on himself only. You may have read the first, the Buddha's first sermon. And in that sutta, Buddha said, in the Dhammas unheard of before. So that means these Four Noble Truths were not known by beings before the Buddha appears in the world. And the Buddha taught them in his very first sermon. Now you all know that exactly 2 months after his enlightenment, Buddha taught his first sermon to his five disciples. And in the first sermon, Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. So we know that the Four Noble Truths are the important part of the Buddha's teachings, because he taught them first in his first sermon to his five disciples. And also, the Four Noble Truths are important because there can be no enlightenment without the realization of these Four Noble Truths. Buddha once said, it is through not understanding, not penetrating the Four Noble Truths, that I, as well as you, had to wander so long through the round of rebirths. So Buddha said, it is through not understanding and not penetrating the Four Noble Truths that, say, he as well as his disciples had to go through this round of rebirths for a long, long time. So, since it is impossible to gain enlightenment without seeing by direct knowledge these Four Noble Truths, these Four Noble Truths are very important. And Buddha was very firm and sure about these four noble truths. He said there are only these four noble truths, and there are no more or no less. And also, there is no one other than the Buddhas who can teach these four noble truths. Who can teach means who can discover by themselves and teach the four noble truths to all beings. So, these four noble truths are important both to understand and to realize. Now we come to the four noble truths. We will follow the exposition given by the Buddha himself. You can find this exposition in the first sermon and also in the discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness. Now the Buddha said the first noble truth of the noble truth of dukkha. Birth is suffering, decay is suffering, disease is suffering, death is suffering, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair are suffering. Association with beings and things that one dislikes is suffering. Dissociation from being and things that one likes is suffering. Not to get what one desires is suffering. And in brief, the five aggregates of clinging are suffering. So this is the exposition given by the Buddha. Let us go through it one by one. Now, Buddha said, birth is suffering. Birth is suffering. Birth here means conception for human beings, conception in the womb of the mother. So birth is suffering because it is a basis for all sufferings we encounter in our lives. So since we have birth as a human being, we suffer old age, disease, death, sorrow, lamentation, and so on. So Buddha said birth is suffering. Then decay or old age is suffering. We don't need much explanation about this. Getting old, we do not like to get old. We like to be young, or at least we like to look young. But however much we don't want to get old, however much we want to look young, we are getting old day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, second by second. And so decay or old age is one which we do not like, but we have to endure. So decay or old age is also suffering. And disease is suffering. To have any kind of disease is suffering. Death is suffering. So we don't want to die. We are afraid of death, but we will have to face it one day, and there is no escape from death, and so this is also suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair, these are suffering. So we don't need much thoughts to understand this. And then association with beings and things that one desires, that one dislikes, is suffering. This is also not difficult to understand. If we have to live with someone we don't like, we suffer. Or if we have to have something we don't like, suppose you have a car you don't like and you have to be driving that car. So every time you drive that guy, you are not in a good mood, you are suffering. So it's plain, it's easy to understand. And then dissociation from beings and things that one likes. If you are separated from your loved ones, you suffer. If you are separated from something you like, you cherish, say your new car, maybe your house or whatever, then you suffer. And then not to get, am I going too wrong? Not to get what one desires. No, not to get what one desires is suffering. You want to get something and you don't get it and you suffer, right? Now, that is a superficial understanding of it. A deeper understanding of it is here, not to get what we desire means we don't want to get old. We don't want to get disease. We don't want old age, freedom from disease, freedom from death. And so that is suffering. That is tormenting us. We don't like it, but we have to suffer. So with these words or explanations, Buddha taught us the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering, which we can understand easily. Nobody will, deny that these are suffering. But there is another aspect of suffering, that the first noble truth, which Buddha stated at the end of the exposition of the first noble truth, and that is, in brief, the five aggregates are suffering. Now, we have no difficulty in accepting birth as suffering, decay as suffering, and so on. But with regard to the last statement, that is, in brief, the five aggregates of clinging are suffering, we may have some difficulty. Don't we sometimes enjoy ourselves? Sometimes we are happy. As young men, you may enjoy some sensual pleasures and so on. And is that sukha? Is that happiness? Or isn't that happiness? But according to the Buddha, they are also dukkha, right? Now, the five aggregates of clinging. I hope you are all familiar with the five aggregates. Now, Buddha said that most beings are composed of five groups, they are called five aggregates. Aggregate of matter, aggregate of feeling, of perception, of mental formations, and of consciousness. Or we can say we have the body, feeling, perception, other mental state, and consciousness. And these five aggregates, almost all of these five aggregates are the object of clinging, object of attachment. So by this last sentence, in brief, the five aggregates of clinging are suffering, Buddha means to say everything in the world of sentient beings is suffering. So what we think, what we consider to be happiness is, in the analysis of Buddha, suffering. Why? Because Buddha said, whatever is impermanent is dukkha. So anything that is impermanent must be dukkha. Whether we translate it as suffering or not, everything that is impermanent is dukkha. Our bodies, are they permanent or impermanent? Our bodies will not last forever, right? Our thoughts, our mental states also, they just come and go. So what we take to be happiness also just come and go. You enjoy life, you enjoy, sensual pleasures, but they just also do not last long. They just come and go. So since they are impermanent, because they have a beginning and an end, they are said to be dukkha. So in this sense, everything in this ancient world is dukkha.
That is why we should understand dukkha with reference to the meaning given by the commentary, that dukkha means something that is despicable and empty. Now, despicable means because it is the haunt of, or because it is the home of many dangers. And it is empty because there is no permanent entity or no soul or no self. So, we should understand the First Noble Truth on both these two levels, the ordinary level and the deeper philosophical level. So only when we understand in these two ways can we say that we understand the First Noble Truth. Only when we understand in this way can we accept that dukkha is everywhere. But it is not to make you depressed. And many people say that they don't like Buddhism because Buddhism talked about dukkha very much. But it is like a physician telling a patient that he has a disease. A physician examines a patient and he finds a disease in that man, and then a physician must say, "You have such a disease." So we cannot accuse a physician of being pessimist or having desire to depress his patients, because it is a fact and he must declare this fact to the patient. So in the same way, we are like patients, and Buddha diagnoses us, and then he found that we are suffering from this dukkha disease. So Buddha said, "You have this dukkha disease." So it is just stating the fact, not to make us sorry, not to make us depressed. And if we understand the last explanation of the Buddha, that the five aggregates of clinging are suffering, then we can understand that and we can accept that the world is really dukkha. So according to the last statement in the exposition of the First Noble Truth, we should understand that life itself is suffering, or life is equated with suffering. So when we say suffering, we mean life, and when we say life, we mean suffering. Now, next, Buddha pointed out the cause or the origin of suffering or dukkha. And Buddha said it is craving. So here craving means craving or attachment, greed, lust, everything, every mental state that has connection with desire or want. So Buddha said the craving is the origin of suffering, the origin of dukkha. And he explains that this craving gives rise to fresh rebirth. Now, rebirth is life, right? Rebirth is the beginning of life, and so rebirth is life. So this rebirth, life, is dukkha. And here Buddha said, craving gives rise to fresh rebirth. So it is same as saying craving gives rise to or brings about dukkha. And also he said, this craving is bound up with pleasure and lust. Actually, pleasure and lust are themselves craving. So craving, lust, pleasure, attachment, greed, they mean the same thing. And also Buddha said, it finds ever fresh delight here and there. So here and there means in this life and in that life, in lives. Now it is said that the first active thought moment in one life is accompanied by attachment to that life. So wherever a being is reborn, even if he is reborn in hell, the first active moment in that life is always bound up with attachment. So it takes delight in the here and there. And there are three kinds of craving mentioned in the first Sama and also mentioned in other places. So the origin of dukkha is craving. Now here, when it's Buddha said, craving gives rise to fresh rebirth and so on, that means the present rebirth is the result of the past craving. And then present craving will be the cause of the future rebirth. So in that way, we should understand the second noble truth. Now another way of understanding it is to consider situations in this life. And we can see that craving causes suffering. We often heard news about a plane crash, and many people were killed in the crash. So when we heard the news, how much dukkha do we suffer? Maybe just a little bit. Or we may say, oh, poor people, something like that. So we don't feel so deeply. But if there was a friend of us among those who perished, our suffering is greater. We suffer more. What if a relative of ours was in that crash, or a very dear person was in that crash? We would suffer a lot. So our suffering actually is not caused by the death of a person, but the attachment we put on that person. The more attachment we have for that person, the more dukkha we suffer. So the real culprit here is the attachment or craving for that person, and not the death of or the loss of that person. So and the same with things, say we put much value on. Sometimes the price of the thing may be not great, but we put some sentimental value on it, and so we cherish it. But if that thing is taken away from us, if that thing is stolen away or say gets broken, we suffer a lot because we have put so much attachment, a sentimental value on that thing. So our suffering actually is not caused by the loss of that thing, but actually by the degree of attachment we put on that thing. So if we consider that way, we can understand that attachment causes suffering. But Buddha's explanations goes deeper than that, actually. Buddha's explanation here is craving gives rise to fresh rebirth. Now, we are all attached to our lives. We don't want to die. We will hold on to our lives until the last moment. So strong is that attachment to life that it has a potential, say it has the energy, say to create another life. So even though we die here, the attachment we have creates or brings about or give rise to another another birth in the future. So the future rebirth is actually the cause, the result of the attachment we have in this life. So that actually Buddhas and those who have the supernormal power of remembering past lives and also supernormal power of seeing beings dying from one existence and being reborn another. So such persons alone can see this clearly. But we also believe that craving gives rise to fresh rebirth because the Buddha taught it, and also we can infer from craving causing suffering in this life. So if it can cause suffering in this life, it can also cause suffering in future lives because it has the power, it has the potential to create a life in the future. And Buddha said, there are three kinds of craving. Now I want you to be familiar with the Pali names of these three kinds of craving. The first is Kama Tanha, K-A-M-A-T-H-A-N-A. The second is Bhava Tanha, B-H-A-V-A. And the third is Vibhava Tanha, V-I-B-H-A-V-A, and then Tanha. I want you to be familiar with the Pali words because there is so much misunderstanding about these three. The first one, Kama Tanha, means craving for desirable objects. Now there are sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, and thinkings, thoughts, which are desirable. And desire for these desirable objects, attachment to these desirable objects, is called Kama Tanha. So it is craving for desirable objects. The second one is called Bhava Tanha. Now the word Bhava means existence, becoming. Here, according to the commentaries, here it means not just existence or becoming, but it is a wrong view that beings are permanent, or there is a soul and that soul is permanent. So the bhava here means what is called the eternity view, taking things to be eternal, taking things to be permanent. It is one of the wrong views. Now, craving associated with this kind of wrong view is called Bhava Tanha. So Bhava Tanha does not mean craving for existence. Craving for existence can be included in the first one, Kama Tanha. Because existence is also the desirable object. So Bhava Tanha here means craving which is accompanied by or which is associated with the eternity view. Say you may have a view that things are permanent, things are eternal, and the craving that is accompanied by that view, that arises together with that view, is called Bhava Tanha. So it is not craving for existence. craving associated with eternity view. And the third one, vibhavatana. Now there is another view which takes that beings die and then there is no more of them in the future. It is called annihilation view. So a being is annihilated at death and there is no more of him in the future. Craving associated with or accompanied by that kind of wrong view is called vibhavatana. Sometimes beings may have eternity view or some others may have annihilation view, and a craving accompanying that view is called bhavatana or vibhavatana. So vibhavatana is craving associated with annihilation view. Now some translate it as craving for self-annihilation, and it's very misleading. Once I gave a book to a man, and next week he said, Buddhism accepts suicide because you are craving for self-annihilation. It's mentioned in the mentioned by the Buddha in this sutta. So it is vibhavatana is not craving for annihilation, but craving associated with this kind of wrong view. So these are three kinds of craving described by the Buddha in his exposition of the Second Noble Truth. Now a clever physician will not just stop at finding the disease, he will also find out what causes that disease. In the same way, the Buddha first discovered that, say, the world of sentient beings has this disease of suffering. And he does not stop there. He also discovers the origin of that suffering, or what causes that suffering. Now, after knowing the disease and the cause of the disease, the next question would be what? Can that disease be cured? In the same way, after understanding that there is dukkha and that is the origin of dukkha, we want to know whether there is absence of dukkha, whether this disease of dukkha can be cured. Okay, I'm going to leave you today with the disease and the cause of disease. You'll have to wait 1 month to get the answer whether it can be cured. Okay.